Welcome back for episode 58 of the Ross Boland Podcast, RBP 58, brought to you by Grand X Media. I am your host, Ross Boland, here at the Grand X Media Studios in Austin, Texas, with producer Micah Weiner.
Happy 5th of July, Ross. It's great to be here.
July 4th plus one.
I am tired.
If you are new to our show, every episode is broken down into segments. You can find those segments with time cues in the description. You don't have to have listened to any of the preceding episodes in order to enjoy this one. But if you like the show, go back, listen to them all. You don't want to miss out on any inside jokes or running jokes or priceless knowledge. Follow our show on Instagram, at the Ross Boland Podcast, and on Twitter, at Ross Boland Pod. We're on Facebook somewhere, too. If you care, you can find it. Every day through our social media outlets, we're putting out photos and videos related to the show, recent topics, highlights from old episodes. We make announcements and shit. We also fill up our Instagram story with slides that RBP gang members have sent to Micah and I on Snapchat. My Snapchat, by the way, is at WR Boland. Micah's is at MicahTX. Keep those snaps coming our way. We will post the good ones on our Instagram story. A couple of announcements, and then we're going to jump right into this. First of all, speaking of the Instagram stories, I have been way the fuck behind catching up on the thousands of Snapchats the RBP gang floods my shit with because I don't have internet at the crib at the moment. I just moved, and it takes longer to do that shit on just straight up AT&T's, you know, service than I could be doing on the Wi-Fi. So I've been moving. You know, 4th of July came through. No excuses, though. I get the internet back tomorrow. I'll be back on top of y'all's Snapchats you're sending me. I'll also be back on Fortnite, and I'll be streaming again this weekend for the first time in forever. So if you want to play Fortnite on the live stream, or if you want to challenge me to, like, some one-on-one in FIFA on the live stream, hit me up. You do need to be good, though. If you are ass, I will belittle you. That's a warning. Speaking of which, the combination of the holiday and not having any of the internet has made me not be able to do as much marketing as I usually do for the show. So I'm getting my dick kicked in on listens this week. It is imperative that all active members of the RBP gang uphold their legal obligations by telling one friend, family member, coworker, or neighbor about the show this week, as well as subscribing, rating, and reviewing, obviously, so that I'll call off the dogs. Thank you. First segment.
Oh, if I could quickly hop in here before we get to the first segment, which I'm very excited about. Just a quick note. We talked last week about how we were disappointed by Tidal keeping Beyonce and Jay-Z's music away from us. Several listeners have pointed out to myself, and I'm sure to you, Ross,
yes,
that the Jay-Z and Beyonce album is available on Spotify under the artist name The Carters.
Yeah, that's where they really fucked that up.
So I still haven't listened to it, but I'm going to. So thank you, and now you know.
I just
appreciate
listened
everybody
to it.
Who helped me out.
I just listened to it. It was solid. I'll say this. It needs to be set up to where if I search Beyonce or if I search Jay-Z, The Carters album pops up. It doesn't. So that's where the confusion came in. And thank you to those who did inform us, as Micah said. But yeah, the album is solid. I'm surprised it's not getting more run than it has been. I mean, it's pretty good. But yeah, shit is on Spotify, turns out. Next, straight up mobsters you haven't heard of. Oh.
Ooh, new segment alert.
So we're going to talk about mobsters here and there on occasion. And hopefully ones that you haven't heard of. This is one I hadn't heard of. First one ever. Louis Lepke Buchalter. Buchalter? Whatever. Louis Lepke. This dude lived from February 6th, 1897 to March 4th, 1944. He was a Jewish-American mobster and the head of the Mafia hit squad that became known as Murder, Inc. or Murder Incorporated, which obviously is a record label later on in American history, but that was during the 1930s, the name of his organization that...
It's murder!
Exactly.
Is that what they said?
It's murder! Yeah, I miss Ja Rule sometimes. Other times I don't, but this was an organization of several thousand killers for hire who were paid regular salaries by the New York and Chicago mafia families to hunt down and kill anyone who irritated them. Basically, Louis Lepke, He ran the Mafia's own private hit squad. Some other notable members of this group were Meyer Lansky, Lucky Luciano, and Bugsy Siegel. But it should be noted, most those are Italian gangsters, obviously. Most of the assassins in Murder, Inc. were Jewish, and they all answered to Lepke. He got his nickname, Lepke, because his mother called him Lepkella. I can't do a Jewish accent or pronounce their words, but that means Little Louie in Yiddish. How about that? Lepke's introduction to crime was pushcart shoplifting. Now, does that mean like grocery store pushcarts? That's what it sounds like to me.
Sure.
Was he like sprinting through parking lots just grabbing from baskets? Because that is gangster as hell.
Yeah.
I might start doing this. I don't know. Could be my introduction to crime or organized crime. But anyway, by the time this, by 1919, this dude had already served two prison terms. And then him and his friend, Jacob Gura Shapiro, they strong-armed their way to control of the unions representing garment workers on the Lower East Side. This is where he really started to get rolling, by extorting these garment workers, which is just kind of random. This enabled him to shake down factory owners by threatening to hit them with strikes. He took control of the unions, which also guaranteed him income and capital by diverting union dues and bank accounts from their base in the garment industry.
Diversify your assets,
Ross. You got to. Buckalter branched out, and that's when he started shaking down other area businesses with his protection racket. So he had his own little, you know, full-blown organized crime thing going. Though he was later to enjoy greater power and income from his ventures after becoming a major mafia player. He kept control over the garment industry unions because they were so lucrative. Like, even when he got deeper in the game, he still kept his garment industry racket going. During his time, he was one of the premier labor racketeers in New York City. At one point, he got 30 years in Leavenworth for drug trafficking. And unfortunately, then it was found out he was the killer of one Joseph Rosen. He was a truck driver who refused to get out of town on Buckalter's order. And a snitch named Abe Rellis, to save himself, ratted out our boy, Lepke, for this and four other murders. And he caught the death penalty. And he sat in, what was the name of the electric chair? Like Old Sparky or something?
Yeah, I thought that was one in Florida or something.
Oh, really? Wrong. Well, he got zapped on March 4th, 1944, 3 years after he was convicted. As many as 100 deaths were attributed to Lepke himself.
Wow.
While those under his control, in other words, he ordered these hits, that number might be up to around 1,000 human beings slain at Lepke's order. So a lot of people went down because of this dude. Here's an interesting thing about him. To date, in history, he is the only American mob boss to receive the death penalty in the United States after being convicted of murder. Ever.
Wow.
Pretty wild shit.
And notorious.
That, yeah. Louis Lepke. Buckalter. Your straight-up mobster you haven't heard of. Next segment, which is semi-related to this one, French gangster escapes prison by helicopter. So this is a badass story that was in the news this week. France's most infamous criminal, this dude named Redouane Fayde, F-A-I-D, Fayde, I don't know. The dude broke out of prison for the second time, and he did this shit in spectacular fashion, like straight out of a Hollywood movie-style escape. The escape began when heavily armed men took a flight instructor hostage at a nearby flying club. They hijacked his helicopter, forced him to fly it, but hijacked it, and then forced him to land at the one part of the prison compound that this man was being held in, which doesn't have anti-aircraft netting, which, in hindsight, if the rest of the compound has anti-aircraft netting, they probably should have just put that shit everywhere. I don't know what...
Yeah, that seems like an error.
They made a statement that was something along the lines of, well, prisoners only hang out in that part of the compound when they're being released, so it didn't need anti-aircraft. It's like, just put the fucking netting everywhere. All right? Anyway, after they landed the chopper, armed men with ARs used smoke bombs and angle grinders to make their way to the prison visiting room where our boy was meeting with his brother. And the unarmed wardens in that room, which why the fuck were they unarmed? I really
Good
don't
question.
Know.
Yeah.
You should probably be armed. You're a prison warden. They didn't really put up much of a fight. This whole getaway was over in less than 10 minutes without a single fucking shot fired. Wild. Then police found that chopper dumped by a highway about 40 miles away from the prison. The insides were torched. The pilot was also found, like, shocked, but totally unharmed. And then later, two getaway cars were also found, one abandoned in a shopping center, trash, both also torched. A little bit from CBS here. France's most recognized gangster has said he modeled his infamous 1990s bank and armored car heist on Hollywood crime thrillers like Heat, and once even personally thanking movie director Michael Mann for being his, quote, technical advisor.
What?
So this dude drew all of his inspiration from Michael Mann films. And he made a helicopter escape. This is fucking nuts.
Sounds like something out of a Michael Mann film.
Yeah. Yeah, he was serving a 25-year sentence for murder. And his other escape, the one, you know, I referenced at the beginning of the segment, he blew his way out of jail in 2013 using explosives that were hidden in a pack of tissues. But he got hunted down 6 weeks later. How do you get explosives in a pack of tissues into a prison? France sounds disorganized with their incarceration system. They got to get better. But yeah, I just thought that was a cool little story I wanted to share. you don't hear about shit like that very often. This is like El Chapo.
El Chapo.
Yeah, he's like the French El Chapo. Quickly, a word from one of our sponsors. As you know, I've said it time and time again, a quality night's sleep imperative to mental health. You make fewer decisions, improve your memory. If you suffer from anxiety or other mental ailments or exhaustion, a good night's sleep is the best thing to get your mind where it needs to be. It's not marketing, it's just straight up science. And that's where our sponsor, Lisa, comes in with the best mattresses and pillows and other products for sleeping in the whole damn game. To design a better mattress, Lisa leveraged 30 plus years of experience and hundreds of hours of testing science to develop the perfect mattress for all body shapes and sleeping styles. They are on a mission to provide a better night's sleep for everybody. And through their 110 program, Lisa donates one mattress for every 10 they sell. That's over 26,000 mattresses and counting at this point. They also strive to leave the world a better place than they found it, which doesn't stop with those mattress donations. Together with the Arbor Day Foundation, Lisa plants one tree for every mattress sold. And they've committed to planting 1 million trees by 2025. So not only is Lisa the greatest company in the world, hooking you up with the best night's sleep a human being can possibly get, they're also striving to make the world a better place in general at the same damn time as we all should be in the RBP gang. They are offering you big sales, big time savings right now. If you go to Leesa.com, LEESA.com/RBP, you can get $160 off your Leesa mattress. And if you go with the Sapira by Lisa, which combines memory foam and spring technology...
You should do that.
I would advise that you do this. It's the one I sleep on. It's the one Micah sleeps on. They're fantastic. Unbelievable. Best mattress I've ever had, bar none, not even close. If you go with the Sapira, $235 off. So go to leesa.com/RBP. That's leesa.com/RBP today. Hook yourself up with a new bed. If your mattress leaves you wanting, this is the place to fix it. Just for being an RBP gang member, just for being a listener of the show, big money off your purchase. Leesa.com/RBP. Next segment. Going to the movies solo dolo. So last night, I hit the movies for the first time in my life alone. Solo dolo. Nobody else. Just me. I've never done this before. And it was a pretty eye-opening experience. Why did I do it? I really wanted to see the horror film Hereditary. I'm a huge, huge scary movie psycho. And Taylor gets way too shook by horror movies for the most part. She deemed this one to be too much for her to handle. And I decided, fuck it, I'm going to roll alone to celebrate the 4th of July. As far as the movie goes, first of all, Hereditary, it was solid. It was good. It wasn't great. I don't want to be throwing out spoilers and shit, so I'm not going to give like a detailed review here or anything like that. But I'll just say this. There is a lot of decapitation in this movie, which is incredibly ironic, considering my next-door neighbor had a very realistic human head in their yard last week. So it just kind of all tied together for me, right? Anyway, the solo dolo movie experience had some pros and cons. the pro, biggest pro for me was that, like, obviously nobody's bugging you. Nobody's distracting you or talking to you or stealing your popcorn. It's just you. You can focus a little bit better. A huge con would be that there's nobody to remark on trailers with before the movie begins. Like, I kept finding myself wanting to be like, that looks tight, or that looks like trash, and turning to an empty seat next to me and just getting real lonely and sad.
Sorry about that.
I know, it's okay. It should be said, I watch movies solo at home all the time, like when Taylor isn't home, or if she's asleep, or if there's a horror movie I want to watch, and she's like, fuck that, go watch it in your office. But the movie theater experience is a little different. Obviously, you have a big-ass screen. And obviously, you're going to be grubbing hard on food that is likely terrible for you. Like, I ate an entire pepperoni pizza and a massive tub of popcorn and had a root beer. And I'll say this. You do have to trust that none of the other humans in the theater are going to fuck up the movie for you by, like, talking or sneezing or having their phone go off, which actually did happen during Hereditary and is inexcusable trash. This motherfucker's phone went off for, like, 15 seconds. What? Just turn the phone off, man. It's simple. Or you just make sure it's, your phone should never be on loud. Who leaves their phone on loud? Do you leave it on loud?
No.
Who does?
Never intentionally.
You don't need a phone ringing.
But yeah, if there's even, I mean, sometimes the phone rings in the office unintentionally, I would think. Sometimes your phone gets turned on. When you're in the movie theater, you turn your phone off or you turn on silent. You do that. That's like the first thing you do.
This guy had a really bad ringtone too. It was like a late 2000s, can you say late 2000s? Did people get that? It's like 2009, 2010, some rap song. Anyway, all in all, about the Solo Dolo movie experience, I would say this. I would definitely do it again. It's kind of cathartic. Cathartic. Cathartic?
Sure.
Right? Therapeutic, whatever. And it's also kind of like a big dick move. It's like, yeah, fuck you. I'm here alone. I just don't give a fuck. Somebody stop me. I enjoyed it. Micah, have you ever done the movie solo?
Once. I remember I saw Old School. This is like 15 years ago.
Alone?
Or no, not Old School. Road Trip.
Wow.
Road Trip, like 15 years ago.
The Tom Green classic.
The Tom Green classic, yes.
Road Trip was...
I mean,
I
was—I don't know what year that came out.
It was
and I
a favorite of mine for a while. I loved Road Trip.
It's the only time I've ever seen a movie by myself.
Why? Well, how did it happen?
I don't remember why.
You just had to see
Road
Trip.
And I just remember thinking, like, this is enjoyable. It was in 2000. I was like a sophomore in high school. I probably drove myself to the theater.
That's strange.
It was weird. And it's the last time I've done it. And I remember thinking, like, this is nice. I like being here.
Yet
I went to the movies.
Yeah, you've never done it again.
Yeah. I went to the movies last Monday night. Sunday night. Sunday or Monday? Sunday.
What'd you see?
Uncle Drew!
What?
I saw Uncle Drew, the Kyrie Irving movie.
Yeah.
And we won't talk about the movie. Nobody gives a shit. But I will say this. I got some Raisinets. And goddamn, that's a good snack.
Yeah, that's good shit.
Those are good.
Movie theater snacks are highly... I guess they're not underrated. Everybody knows they're dope. They're fucking good. But this bucket of... You've been to Alamo, I assume. Draft House?
Sure.
The bucket of popcorn they give you is quite large.
Yeah. Don't they refill it, too?
Yeah, it's bottomless.
You gotta be a psycho to do that.
Yeah, I've never refilled it. I've never put up a card and been like, I need more of this.
Yeah.
In fact, last night, at one point,
especially by yourself.
I considered putting up a card and saying, please take this away from me. I can't stop eating it because I'm a gluttonous scumbag. And I was just covered in popcorn by the end of the thing. It's just all over my face.
You can never
get
the butter and or whatever that stuff is off your fingers.
Yeah, it's pretend butter, I think.
They might use real butter there. I saw a movie at the Westgate Theater, which is a movie I probably haven't been to, a theater I haven't been to in 15 years.
Okay.
The evolution of movie theaters to all have like reclining leather seats and
It's the best.
This is a big upgrade. I might have to get back into American cinema.
Yeah.
Some of my problems with Uncle Drew are emblematic of the American cinema issue I have, which is one of the big ones, cinematography-wise. All of these movies, people often ask why I don't like American cinema. Here's one reason. The cinematography sucks in 2018 because everything is shot to be watched on an iPhone later. And so there's lots of like close-ups, and the framing sucks, and it's just not very interesting to look at. And there was a lot of that in the Uncle Drew movie. There's also a lot of product placement. and a lot of Shaq acting like a clown, which was actually some of the best parts of the movie.
I'm still trying
No spoiler alert there.
I mean, we're, what, 58 episodes deep, and I'm still trying to figure you and your movie thing out. Like, how you chose to go pay to see Uncle Drew in theaters is something that I just can't, I can't wrap
Uncle
my head around.
Drew!
Who did you go with?
I made my girlfriend go with me because none of my friends who are basketball fans would go.
How did you get her to do that? Like,
I was really nice to her, I think. I don't know. I did something else for her, and I was
that
like,
works.
I'll do this if you come to Uncle Drew with me. And she seemed to sort of enjoy it.
Was it like you're going to do the dishes, or was it like a sexual thing?
No. I think it was like a chore around the house.
Yeah. Bummer. Well, that upsets me on so many different levels that you went and saw Uncle Drew, yet you refused to watch actual good American films. I'm still, one day, people beg me all the time, like hit me up on email, like please make Micah explain his French film, French noir, whatever it is that you're obsessed with. Make him give us an explanation. And I haven't brought myself to a point where I feel like that's going to happen yet. I like the mystery around it. Right? You're kind of shrouded in
Thank
mystery
you.
As this weirdo who enjoys French films but not American films.
Yeah, it's easier to say the things I don't like about American films to explain it to the audience, but we'll do it another time.
You know, George Michael in Arrested Development, he enjoys French films because he likes the way they think in regard to cousins being able to love cousins and have sexual relations with them.
Interesting take.
Next segment, animal of the week. This is one of my faves. I'm psyched about this. The Japanese dwarf flying squirrel. As always, I highly recommend pulling up Google images of this cute little fucker while we all get mad knowledgeable about Japanese dwarf flying squirrels. First off, it should be noted, insanely tight name. Japanese dwarf flying squirrel. Just a lot going on there. It's Japanese. Also, it's a dwarf. Also, it's a squirrel.
That flies.
But hold up, it can fly. Yeah. It's one of two species of old world flying squirrels in the genus Pteromys. I'm a huge fan of old world flying squirrels over new world flying squirrels. Huge difference. Everybody knows that. The Japanese dwarf flying squirrel is native to Japan, which is a shocker. It inhabits subalpine forests and boreal evergreen forest on Honshu and Kyushu Islands. I love forests. The body length of these little dudes can be 14 to 20 centimeters. They're very small. The length of the tail, 10 to 14 centimeters. Males and females look the same. They can actually curl up into a little ball that's small enough to fit in the palm of your hand. And they weigh between 150 and 230 grams. Very light, which obviously contributes to the reason they can fly. They have a membrane connecting their wrists and ankles, which enables them to glide from tree to tree. I've always kind of wished I had webbed hands or feet for like 24 hours just to see what kind of damage I could do. I feel like I'm built aerodynamic enough to pull it off, at least like tree to tree like the JDFS does. But I don't, unfortunately. I've just got normal feet and hands. During the day, the Japanese dwarf flying squirrels, they're antisocial little dudes. They hide in a hole, usually in a coniferous tree. They emerge at night. They're nocturnal. To feed on buds, leaves, bark, fruits, and seeds. Mostly herbivores. They will eat some insects and stuff if they find them. They creep like gangsters in the nighttime. You got to respect the night grind. I'm a night grinder. There's less distractions, more silence, which we all know is golden. So I appreciate the nocturnal animals of the world, even the JDFS. The Japanese dwarf flying squirrel, it doesn't really have any threats. There are plenty of their population out there. They're listed as a, quote, least concerned species, end quote, by the International Union for Conservation of Nature, which seems good. They're just out there living and surviving and thriving. When they eat, they assume a hanging posture. They just hang upside down like, you know, like Batman or like how bats sleep. And they pull a twig to their mouth with their forepaws if the twig isn't strong enough to support its weight. And they obtain food at the tip. Just the tip, just for a second, just to see how it feels. The color of their fur serves as kind of a natural camouflage, so they're very difficult to spot on trees. that can glide up to 160 meters in distance in one go. Nice distance. They've got big old eyes on their little faces, so they obviously to provide them with better night vision since they're nocturnal and they're grinding while the rest of the world sleeps. When they are born, the baby squirrels have closed eyes and no fur. They're just naked as hell. And their internal organs are visible through their skin.
What?
Which is crazy. That's like a lizard thing or like a weird frog. You don't really think of like a squirrel being see-through. Anyway, at 1 week old, their skin becomes darker in shade and it stops being see-through. Their fur begins to grow. At 2 weeks, their ear canals finally open up and their toes separate from each other, becoming individual digits. At 3 weeks, their fur grows on their tail. At 4 weeks, they're fully developed. And the babies begin to move around at 2 weeks of age. They're weaned by their mother at the about 6 weeks of age. One bummer about these guys, the Japanese dwarf flying squirrel, average lifespan is only 4 to 5 years. It's not very long. So you really got to milk that. You know, live life to the fullest if you're a JDFS. That is our animal of the week.
Shouts to all the JDFSs.
Let's talk about another one of our sponsors, Micah. Action Alley.
Let's talk about it.
Give us the information.
Yeah, I would love to, Ross. So coming up next weekend, not this weekend, but next weekend, I believe it's July 14th, Saturday, July 14th.
So not the approaching weekend.
Right.
The one after that. I always say next weekend.
Well, this week is messed up because we had yesterday. Today feels like a Monday, even though it's a Thursday.
Yeah, dude, I'm not down with these midweek holidays. That was rough.
This one stinks. Yeah. Anyway, Saturday, July 14th, at the Kentucky Motor Speedway, NASCAR comes to the Kentucky Motor Speedway, which is halfway, which is on the Kentucky-Ohio border, actually.
Mm.
So if you live in Cincinnati or nearby, it's right there. Any of those states, you know what to do. I think it's halfway between Cincinnati and Louisville is what we looked at. NASCAR is there, which is cool. NASCAR's fun. These are good spectator sports.
Good times.
Action Alley is a special deal that they're running at the Kentucky Motor Speedway only. $30 gets you a ticket, especially if you're a college student. There's a special area for people 18 to 25. You get to play giant lawn games, you know, giant Jenga, bags, all that shit.
I only play giant lawn games.
Yeah,
I don't play regular size.
Cool. There's also a DJ, some other shit going on. And the most important part, $2 beers.
Oh, shit.
So $30 gets you a ticket to the race, plus access to this all-day tailgate with camping, I think, that's free. Action Alley, check out the Kentucky Motor Speedway's website. If you're anywhere, if you're within 4 hours of this, you should probably be there Saturday, July 14th, especially if you're a college student. $30, $2 beers. Do it. Check it out.
You could drink 10 beers for $20.
And you get to meet, maybe, Jared Borislow and Dan Regester.
Wow.
From Grand X will be there.
How about that?
Doing Man on the Street, probably very annoying bits.
The two least enjoyable Grand X employees that you could meet.
Yeah. So that's there too. They'll be there. So look for them.
Action Alley.
Dan has told me they are staying in a casino hotel.
All right, now I'm jealous.
Which means, yeah, so there's a casino nearby, my friends. Go check out Kentucky Motor Speedway if you're anywhere nearby on the East Coast or in the Midwest.
There you go.
Thank you.
Yeah. Next segment. Stuff to Wikipedia when you were high. This week's is Villa Baviera, which is the current organization. It's, first of all, for spelling, if you want to look it up, V-I-L-L-A space B-A-V-I-E-R-A. It's the current organization occupying the location of the infamous and disgraced Colonia Dignidad, which in English means dignity colony. It's in the Mao region of central Chile. This thing, Colonia Dignidad, was founded by German immigrants in the mid-1950s. Its most notorious leader, Paul Schaefer, arrived in the colony in 1961. At its largest, Colonia Dignidad was home to some 300 German and Chilean residents, covered about 53 square miles. Their main legal economic activity was agriculture. At various periods, it was also home to a school, a hospital, two airstrips, a restaurant, and a power station. What you're going to find here is this is a cult. And Schaefer was its longest continuous leader. He was a fugitive accused of child molestation in former West Germany, which is probably not what you want in your cult leader. But the organization that he led in Chile, it obviously was described alternately as either a cult or as a group of harmless eccentrics. It was a very secretive organization, and the colonia was surrounded by barbed wire fences, featured a watchtower and searchlights, and was later reported to contain secret weapon caches. In recent decades, external investigations, including efforts by the Chilean government, uncovered a history of criminal activity in the enclave, including child sexual abuse. So while this guy, Paul Schaefer, was in charge, all the inhabitants of Colonia lived under like a crazy, abnormal, authoritarian system where, in addition to minimal contact with the outside, Schaefer ordered the division of families, broke up families. Parents did not talk to their children, did not know their siblings, prohibited all kinds of relations, sentimental or conjugal, among adult women and men, and enacted the residence of each sex in isolated areas. So he separated them completely. Schaefer sexually abused children. Some were tortured. It's clear from statements of the German doctor Gisela Seewald, who admitted the use of electroshock therapy and sedatives that her boss had claimed were placebos. In 96, Schaefer fled child sex abuse charges in Philly. In Chile. Not Philly. That'd be worse and weirder. But he wasn't arrested until 2005. In the previous year, in his absence, a Chilean court had convicted him of child abuse together with 26 other members of his cult. In 2006, he was finally sentenced to 20 years in prison. He died in prison of a heart ailment in 2010 at the age of 88. And at the time of his death, he was still under investigation for the 1985 disappearance of a mathematician, Boris Weisfeiler, an American citizen who went missing when hiking near Colonia Dignidad. More history about this place. During the military dictatorship of Augusto Pinochet, the Colonia Dignidad served as a special torture center. So this is a very fucked up place that has had a very fucked up history. In 1991, Chile's National Commission for Truth and Reconciliation, which, you know, your country had a bad point, a dark period, if you have a National Commission for Truth and Reconciliation. But they concluded that a certain number of people apprehended by the DINA were really taken to Colonia Dignidad, held prisoner there for some time, and that some of them were subjected to torture, and that besides DINA agents, some of the residents there were involved in these actions. So this cult was also serving as some kind of weird government torture facility. Some of the defectors from the colony have portrayed it as a cult, obviously, where Paul Schaefer had the ultimate power. And they claim that residents were never allowed to leave. They were strictly segregated by gender. Television, TV, phones, calendars were all banned. Residents worked wearing Bavarian peasant garb and sang German folk songs. Like I said, sex was banned. Some of the residents were forced to take drugs to reduce their desires. Drugs were also administered as a form of sedation, mostly to young girls, but to some males as well. And severe discipline in the forms of tortures and beatings were commonplace. Schaefer, this psycho, insisted that these disciplinary actions were spiritually enriching. There are over 1,100 disappeared persons in Chile, many of whom were taken to the colony where they were tortured and killed, including U.S. citizen Boris Weisfeiler, that mathematician. He was a professor, actually, at Penn State. And he vanished on that hiking trip near the border between Chile and Argentina in the early part of 1985. And it's presumed that he was kidnapped and taken to the colony where he was tortured and killed. In 2012, a judge in Chile ordered the arrest of 8 former police and army officials over the kidnapping of Weisfeiler during the Pinochet years, citing evidence from declassified U.S. files. In June and July of 2005, so this is even, it's pretty recent stuff, some of this, Chilean police found 2 large illegal arms caches in or around the colony. The first, within the colony itself, included 3 containers with machine guns, automatic rifles, rocket launchers, and large amounts of ammunition. Some as many as 40 years old, but with evidence of recent maintenance. So people were still cleaning them, maintaining upkeep on these weapons. The cache was described as the largest arsenal ever found in private hands in Chile. So clearly these guys had a lot going on outside of just the torture, the child abuse. They're also rocking big ass weapon caches. The second was found outside a restaurant operated by the colony and also had rocket launchers and grenades in it. In 2005, also, a Chilean secret police operative named Michael Townley, who was then living in the United States under a witness protection program, acknowledged to agents of Interpol, Chile, links between DINA and Colonia Dignidad. So this whole thing started to kind of unravel that they were using this place to do things they should not have, absolutely should not have been doing. There was laboratories, bacteriological warfare shit going on. The experiments were being used on political prisoners at Colonia Dignidad. It was just a fucking mess. The CIA has been involved in this. At some point, the CIA presented evidence of the presence at the colony of the infamous Nazi concentration camp Dr. Joseph Mengele,
Jesus,
known as the Angel of Death, for his lethal experiments on human subjects during the Holocaust. So not only now, if we're counting, the child abuse, the torture, all the crazy bullshit that they did, the weapons, they also might have been housing Nazis from, like, legit World War II Nazis, not like these new racist dipshits we have in the United States. So they were doing a lot of things related to weapon sales and money laundering as well. So the illegal activities were just all the fuck over the place. And as of 2005, there is still a colony on this site, but its current leaders insist that changes have taken place. We insist changes have taken place. They've attempted to modernize the colony. They even allow residents to leave and study at university and open the colony to tourism. You can go visit this fucking thing where all of this insane shit went down. It's pretty messed up. And there's plenty more information about that. Smoke something, get online, Wikipedia. It's all the information about Colonia Dignidad is found under the Villa Baviera Wikipedia page. And you can Google those both separately. There's a ton of other stuff you can read as well. It's very cool. I went down like a 2.5 hour rabbit hole on this place. It's fucked up. It's real fucked up. Next segment. Hotline calls. Our hotline number is 888-WR-BOLIN. It's open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You can call it anytime. It's a voicemail, so you don't have to talk to anybody. You just leave a message. Ask us a question. Give us a segment recommendation. Some constructive criticism about the show. Sing us a song. A trash or not trash. Anything you want. And every week we'll pick some of the calls to play on the show. This week we got two. Here's the first one.
What up, guys? This is Alex from Fort Lauderdale. I got two questions for you. First question is, how far is an appropriate distance to drive to get good pussy? 3 hours? 4 hours? What do you guys think? Secondly, what's your take on getting it on with the dog in the room? Sometimes they're awake, sometimes they're not. Sometimes you wake them up with some shenanigans, so I don't know. I know your ass thoughts on getting them with the dog in the room. Love the show. Bye.
Okay. Let's do this first part first. Everybody knows somebody, or everybody, you know, maybe it's you, is the somebody that you know, that at some point has driven a substantial amount of time and distance for a hookup, right? Girls have done it. Guys have done it. This is not exclusive to, as our caller put it, good pussy. It goes both ways. You can go for some good dick too, right? So his question is, how far is okay, like within reason? And I got to say, it's pretty circumstantial, man. Like if you're looking at a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to hook up with a girl way out of your league, I'd cap it at maybe 3.5 hours, I think is what I would pick. Because like any further than that, and you get, that's fucking crazy. That's far. That's real far. Just fly. Get a ticket. It's probably cheaper. I've never done this personally. I've never been like the traveling hookup guy. But I had friends in college who would like get, you know, I mean, this isn't something they should be proud of, but like get shit-faced and drive back to our hometown to like hook up with somebody or whatever. And this doesn't really happen anymore. Like when you become an adult, this is like a young man's game. You got to have the stamina and the energy to make that drive.
True.
But that's what I would cap it at. 3.5 hours, and that's if you're like looking at something like, I can't pass this up. Realistically, for some normal shit, you should be looking at like an hour. If you're driving more than that, you're going too far out of your way. That's just my opinion. Michael, what's your answer to that?
Yeah. If it's like during the week, let's say it's an hour.
Yeah, that's okay. That's kind of what I mean. Like, because you got shit to do.
And we're assuming that you're in some sort of drought, perhaps.
Right. And you're trying to end that drought. That, I mean, okay, that adds to it. That's a good point. If you're really struggling and this is like, you got to go get this done, you got to do what you got to do. You basically, the limit should be, what is safe? Like, is there a chance you're going to fall asleep on this ride? Is this going to put you in some kind of danger? Is this going to fuck up your whole week's schedule? Like, don't mess up your shit just to go get some ass. But you got to take a lot of things into account here.
I mean, if this is a weekend, like, oh, I'm going to go to Fort Worth this weekend to see some girl and, you know, get it in. That's acceptable, I guess. I don't think you can cross state lines. That should be a rule. I mean, unless like you live on a state line border thing.
Yeah. Okay. Stay in your state.
Yeah, stay in your state. That's a ridiculous rule. I'm sorry. I don't even mean that. Do whatever you want. Basically, depends on how much you need it. Sometimes you just need it. But like 4 hours is definitely the that's it. That's the outer reaches.
Because here's the thing. First of all, it's never going to live up to what you build it up to be, right?
Exactly.
So if you drive more than 4 hours, man, it's going to be hard to make that worth it. Because you're talking about 4 hours there, 4 hours back. That's 8 hours of driving. That better be some good sex.
Yeah, even if you drive that far, like you're going to be nervous the whole time.
You're going to be tired.
She's going to know that you made a big sacrifice to go that far.
Right.
And so it's...
Hopefully she, you know, reciprocates.
I mean, if there's any awkwardness, or then all of a sudden, like, things are off to a bad start.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is tricky. I'd say an hour during the week. And then, you know, on the weekend, that's a little different animal. But good luck to you. Get some sex.
Yeah. Second part, is it okay to bang screw with the dog in the room? And, yeah, obviously. This has become a very real part of my life. My dogs are... attached, very attached to Taylor and I. I can't like put my dogs outside of the room when we go at it because they'll just freak out and cry and bark the whole time and it's hell. So typically, Bella, the little one, she just like posts up at the very bottom corner of the bed underneath the covers and you just have to try not to squish her.
Wow, she's on the bed.
In it, like... Under all the covers, wow. At the bottom corner, she just doesn't care. She's not like affected. She just goes to sleep. But Bruce like hides under the bed. He's still not real clear on what's going on. Dude, the dog thing is a real pain in the ass for sex. I'll be upfront about that. You got to know that. Like if you live with your girlfriend right now and you're like, maybe we should get a dog. Like you really got to think about what kind of dog you're getting. If you're getting an Australian Shepherd, you're gonna have to make some adjustments. There are plenty of other high-maintenance dog breeds that the same rule applies for. If you're getting a lab or whatever, you're fine. But you got to take this shit into consideration. It's not something I took into consideration when I got my dogs. And they'll get you. They'll cock block the shit out of you. They'll shut you down.
Let me ask you a question. Obviously, it's okay to plow with your dog in the room.
It is.
What about cranking?
Yeah, I think that's also something you have to make peace with as a dog owner. First of all, they don't care. They don't care. They probably think you're gross. They're just like, they know you're doing something you shouldn't be doing, right? But they don't care. They just want to be near you.
Okay.
You want to avoid physical contact with your dog.
Oh, yeah, certainly.
At all costs. You can't have them come up and start licking your leg while you're trying to go to Crank Town or something. That's not going to be good. That'll mess you up sexually. So you got to be careful with these things. But, yeah, I mean... if you go to a girl's house, maybe it's your girlfriend, maybe it's not, maybe it's just a hookup or whatever, and she's got a dog, if you can, obviously, try to get that dog not in the same room as you while y'all are doing your thing. That's ideal. But if you're a dog owner and that's not possible, of course it's okay to do your thing with the dog in the room. And then it's a whole different ball game.
It's different if it's your dog.
Because it's your dog.
Yeah, that's a road trip reference. You know what? I'll tell a quick story here. New Year's Eve one year, probably about 10 years ago, I got back to a girl's place. It was a girl I knew a little bit beforehand. And we get up into the bedroom, and her dogs bit me, and I started bleeding.
Oh,
she had
no.
Two little dogs, and one of them bit me in the hand.
It saw you as a threat sexually.
And I started bleeding, and that was it. I never got close to this woman again. It ruined that night, and it ruined my chances in the future.
See?
So I guess he saw me as a threat because I was.
But. Man's best friend, the best pets in the world, but that when it comes to sex or sex-related activities, dogs can be a burden, and they need to be handled with care, and this needs to be something you're prepared to work around if you date a girl with a dog or hook up with a girl with a dog or whatever, or vice versa if you're a chick dating a dude with a dog. Just I guess attack it head on. Don't try to avoid this issue. You got to solve it. That would be my advice. Next call.
Hey man, hey Ross, this is Cameron from the Houston area. I just wanted to know your stance on McDonald's and Sonic and whatever else it's not open late enough. Like I'm driving home at 12:30, 1 o'clock, and I just want to go to Sonic or McDonald's. The shit's closed, man. I just want to just you and Mike can share y'all's thoughts on why that shit closes so damn early. Keep it up. Love the podcast. Later.
Bye.
This shit, first of all, thanks to whoever that other person was. This shit has always bugged the fuck out of me, man. Especially like, I can remember recently, actually, when I went to the Masters in 2017, which I went to the Masters in 2017, if you didn't know that. When we were on the way to Georgia, to Atlanta, Georgia, leaving, you know, Augusta, we had to go to Atlanta to fly. And we were trying to get some food. We were fucking starving. And every single place was closed. Every McDonald's, every fucking restaurant was closed except one. We finally find this McDonald's. We wait in line for 45 minutes because it's the only one open, right? We get up to the drive-thru order window and they said like, oh, sorry, we're closed a little bit because we don't have enough people here to work or whatever. It was insane. Anyway.
That's weird.
But yeah, dude, I guess, Micah, I don't know if you know more about this than I do, but are McDonald's individually franchised still?
Yes.
So is it up to the ownership what hours they operate?
It must be. And I imagine there's some local zoning issues too. You probably can't open and operate a 24-hour restaurant in some cities or some parts of cities or whatever.
Okay, I could see that.
But yeah, no, I think there's probably some ownership leeway.
I would say is this. It is very crucial to you and whatever area you live in or city you live in or town you live in that you locate proper late-night eating establishments that you can rely on. Now, that because the issue you run into here and the one that our caller is pointing out is that's like this is an unplanned trip to a McDonald's or whatever, right? That's where you run into problems. That's where you run into ones that are closed or that suck or whatever. If you plan this shit out and you know you've got 2-3 options around town and you know where they are and when they close, you'll always be good. So that's what I would say is like find your places that are going to be open and utilize them appropriately. Also, it goes without saying, don't ever fucking drink and drive late night to go get food. That's the dumbest shit you could do in your life. Every city in the world now has Favor or some Postmates or some delivery app. People will bring you food. I had 2 cans of dip delivered to my house on Saturday night at like 12:30 because I was too stoned to drive.
Wow, for that.
Safe. I needed some nicotine, and I didn't want to drive. I was high. I can't drive stoned. I've discussed it before. I think too much. I can't make any good decisions. It's not safe. I don't do it, ever. But just order the it's what, $10 more? That or a $10,000 DWI or you end somebody or yourself? Fuck that. Just stay on the couch and order the food. But if you're just late night cruising for food sober, have yourself some established places you can count on, and you'll be all good. Okay? Okay. We've reached a point in the show where you are now, having listened this long, legally obligated to rate and review and subscribe. So go to iTunes, type in the Ross Boland podcast, slap the subscribe button, give us a 5-star rating, take 30 seconds to write a quick review. If you do not, you will hear from our lawyers. The second you fulfill this obligation, we will call out the dogs. Your one other legal obligation as a member of the RBP gang, which you now are, whether you like it or not, blood in, blood out, is to tell one friend, family member, coworker, neighbor, stranger, somebody that you think, man, you know what? This person really might enjoy the Ross Boland podcast and everything they've got going on there. You got to tell them about the show. One person this week, one person next week, and one person the week after that, and so on until the week you die. Follow the show on Instagram at the Ross Boland Podcast and on Twitter at Ross Boland Pod. You can follow me, Ross Boland, on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat at WR Boland. Add me on twitch.com/BossRoland13. Switch the B and the R on Ross Boland, add a 13 on the end. Watch me play Fortnite and shit this weekend. As I said, if you're interested in playing Fortnite or you want to go fucking head-to-head in FIFA, if you want to get your shit pushed in, come Ooh. At me. Come at me. I'll give it to you. X gonna give it to you. Michael, where can the RBP gang members follow you?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Micah Weiner. That's MicahWiener. And on Snapchat at MicahTX. This weekend, I will be grilling a big steak. So get ready for that. That's going to be some good content.
Are you going to be smoking some meats?
One could say that. Shouts to Zuck.
Interesting. Because grilling and smoking meats are not the same thing, right?
Yeah, so I'm not really going to be smoking
meats. So you're not going to be smoking meats.
Grilling these meats.
Is there anything we could say to convince you to change your strategy from steak to smoking meats?
You know what? I live in an apartment complex, and smoking these meats is just not really an option for me.
Okay. All right.
I will also not be using Sweet Baby Ray's because it is trash.
Yeah, you know what? I'll be straight with you. I've never had Sweet Baby Ray's, and this Zuck video is the best thing that ever happened to them or ever will happen
to them.
I've
gotten many Sweet Baby Ray's tweets and snaps, as you have, I'm sure.
Brisket and ribs? Sweet Baby Ray's? We're smoking these meats.
Guys, Sweet Baby Ray's tastes like sugar. Like corn syrup, really.
Yeah.
It's trash.
Yeah, I wouldn't expect Zuckerberg to be the guy that you can rely on to pick the best barbecue sauce, you know?
No.
It doesn't seem like his strong suit. Another place that's not his strong suit, protecting the privacy of his users. No barbecue sauce and no privacy of the users. Anywho, 888-WR-BOLAND is the hotline number. Thank you all for listening, for all of your support, your tweets, your Snapchats, your emails, your direct messages, your phone calls, people catching Fortnite dubs with me on the PS4. Catch me streaming this weekend, and we will catch you in a couple days on RBP 59. Peace. RBP. RBP. Cut the check.